That's all that is. All right. This is obviously, probably, since I'm not a preacher, not your usual sort of sermon. I was teaching something in the Sunday school class, the teenagers, and Heather thought it would be a really good idea, so I talked to the elders, and they sort of thought it would be good to bring this up here. So this is more of a teaching type of thing than your traditional sermon, preaching straight from the Bible, whatever. And basically what it's on is worldview. I think it's easy for a lot of people, especially the ones that are in church and here, sometimes you look at the world and you sort of say, hey, that doesn't make sense, those things are wrong, whatever, it's easy to sort of get upset and angry. At times you can't even explain why, you can't get how other people can make those decisions, you can't get even in your brain why you think, hey, that doesn't make sense. So what I'm going to try and do is pull out four different things that are ways that the rest of the world sees things and how they make decisions and what goes on in their brain that are independent from any of those issues that you sort of traditionally think of. Hey, there you go. I think that's how it fits. Sorry, I kept falling off my head as I was trying to talk. So I'm going to pull through these four things that probably won't make sense now, but I'll keep coming back to them and sort of relating it to Scripture and say, hey, this is how people think and this is how their brain works. And there's a couple of reasons why I want to do that. First one is, that affects all of us just as much as it does anyone else. You may be a Christian, but all of these things, it's how the world sees things. So it's going to affect all of us as well. So you to be able to identify that and say, hey, wait a second, maybe this isn't the best thought pattern for me to be in. Maybe this is how I shouldn't be, how I'm making decisions. Second one is to give you some tools. If you go into any big issue, whatever it is, you know, you want to talk to someone and they are talking about abortion or something else that's important, if you just go up to them and say, no, trust me, you're wrong, and I know why, you're not going to win that argument. You're never going to go through that argument and say, hey, yeah, you're right, you know, you've raised some great points, but it's just not going to happen. It's not the way life works. People have their thoughts and their things. These underlying themes are things you can bring up and say, hey, you know, what do you believe? Is there any absolute truth? Are things set in stone outside of people, or is it all just based on your opinion? And you can have those conversations, and they're sort of about the issue, they're around it, but they're not really head-on saying, okay, this is right or wrong. Last one is, the whole point of this message is to sort of understand that people are making these decisions based on the way they were raised, based on everything that's in their brain. You shouldn't be using these types of things as a stick to beat people. My point is, I'm going to bring up a lot of issues today. This is sort of adult-themed one. There's too many young people. Sort of an adult-themed conversation one. But it's also something that, you know, I don't want you to just jump up and down and say, yes, see, you're right. Yeah, they were wrong. This is something they shouldn't have been doing or shouldn't have been thinking. It's not about getting a stick. It's about saying, hey, you know, we should feel bad for these people. There's a reason they're making that decision. When we see on TV and somebody's a mass shooter or does something, of course, my first thought, everybody's is, geez, you know, take the smack that guy. I can't believe he did this, that, or the other. Heather always responds every time, geez, wonder what happened to them to make them do that. What could be in their brain? What happened? Why did they get that way to get there? And that's what this is about, is sort of saying, why are people making those decisions? Not so you can get angry and get on your soapbox, but so that you can understand them and say, hey, wait a second, there's a reason they're doing that. And most of it actually came from one article, at least the framework, and then basically for a couple of months, actually, everything I read after that, I sort of said, ooh, this fits in there, this fits in there, and I keep sort of coming back to it. So hopefully go reasonably quick, so we're done quick, but if you want to stop me, please do.
John, you just drop the mic down just a hair, so yeah, it won't be so much feedback. Hello? From it. Yeah.
There
you go.
Can you hear me still?
Yeah, that's good.
It keeps moving all over the place.
No, we don't hear you.
Lift it up just a hair.
Hello?
Yeah.
It keeps sliding all over my head, so it's not really helping much. So the first one, basically, is we live in a world today where everything is all about me. That's just the way it is. Everything from start to finish. And this is something just as much in the church as it is anywhere else. So starting, you know, hundreds of years ago, before even the Enlightenment was before our country was founded, people started focusing on individualism and what they can achieve. But back when our country was founded, it was always done in a framework of, you know, God exists, he's there above us. And then individualism is sort of under that, and it fits into that framework. But as we've gone on the last 200 or 300 years, we've moved away from that traditional mindset of there is authority, there's somebody above us, to individualism. It's all about me. There isn't anybody above us. And all of us, whether we're in the church or not, have that. I go to work and I think my bosses are at times idiots, as do all of you. And you don't always want to submit to that authority. In church, I may not always want to submit to elders and everybody else's authority. That's just the way everybody is now. You don't want to look at it. And it's sort of an American thing. We don't want to submit to authority. That's the way it is. But back in biblical times, you know, it was normal to for me to say to Harry, right now, you're going to be a priest when you get older. That's the way it's going to be. That's normal. That's expected. And Harry would grow up and become a priest because that was what authority said, you know? I thought that was the right answer. Someone told me to do it, and I told him to do it. Everybody says, yep, thank you very much. That's good. I'm going to keep going. So it's not necessarily bad that you moved away, but you need to understand the cosmic effect on that is people don't have any respect for authority. I walk up in the classroom right now in college. I have no respect as an authoritative figure in any way, shape, or form. Not in a mean way, but I have students sitting in the front row, two of them. But they can Google anything that I'm going to tell them in 3 seconds. So why should they, you know, treat me as authority? Now my job is to guide them to knowledge. I'm no longer, hey, you know it all, and I come in and tell you how it works. And people don't expect that. They don't have that authority mindset anymore in their brain. Basically, all of those things up top, be true to yourself, whatever, all these things are things that come up all the way through. You know, when someone is a senior graduating from high school, it's always, where are you going to go, what are you going to do, what are you going to be? It's all about them. You know, 50, whatever it was, 60, 70 years ago, JFK had that quote, you know, what can you do for your country? That's not the way anybody's mindset works. And it's not just the young people. It's not just the young people coming up, they have a lack for authority. It's everybody is thinking all about themselves. That's the way it is. You know, there's a few older people in here. If a politician says, you know, we're going to cut Social Security, what's your answer going to be? Hey, wait a second, that's my Social Security. You're not going to automatically think, well, if it's for the common good, you know, good for you. That's not the way it's going to work. Everybody has this mindset, whether you know it or not, and you can't help it. Because every ad, everything is beating it into you. It's all about you. That's the way it is. So how many people do you know really try to live for other people? That just dedicate their life to somebody else. We had two interesting experiences in the last couple of years. We brought in Nani and Poppy into the house for a while. And then we had Jordan and William, for most of you that were here, we were foster parents. Both of the reactions that we got were quite interesting in that everybody that we talked to virtually, I would say at least 90%, came across as, wow, that's really going to crimp your style. Why would you do that? And I was sort of, I get that mindset. I understand a little bit of that. But at the same time, you sort of say, it was universal. There wasn't people saying, wow, that's amazing that, you know, you're going to bring them in and it's going to be part of your home and you're doing whatever. It's always sort of focused on, hey, that's going to take away from you and everything's all about you, right? And you're sort of like, oh, that was interesting. It's sort of an eye-opener for us. But the question is, why are we here? If you read the Bible, you're not here for yourself. It's not all about you. And that's not the way it works. None of us lives for ourselves alone. None of us dies for ourselves alone. If we live for the Lord. If we die for the Lord. So whether we live or die, we belong to the Lord. So, you know, His love overflows for us. Everybody loves to focus on that personal relationship. You can have a relationship with Jesus. It's great. You can do this and that. We've gotten away from that fire and brimstone of, hey, you know, you're going to hell if you don't do this, and you should be scared of God. But there is a little bit of that balance to understand that there's an authority. He's in control. He's the one in the center there. We are here to do His bidding and to do things while we're here, but not necessarily just to make ourselves happy. So I'm going to try with each one of these to give you a few examples to sort of say, yes, that's a nice big picture, but how does that really fit in today's life and how does that work? One, commercials. Every commercial you'll see is about self-gratification. It's about how do you make yourself happy. And you are pounded with it all the time. Every ad, everything, it's always all about you. We flip through a magazine, we're trying to, we never got to it in Sunday school, but we flipped through, I think it was Better Homes and Gardens. So it wasn't even like a bad one. It was, and you're just looking at the ads, and every single ad was, you can take control of this and have this in your house. You can do this, and you get control, and you're in charge, and this will make you happy. And you're sort of like, well, that's what an ad does. Of course it is. But that's what you see all day long, everything about it. TV, reality TV is even worse. But any TV is all about that person. You know, reality TV, they're not about people that are going out and doing good things for other people. They're not based on Christian values. It's all about you and yourself and what you want. Even our children, and we do it, and I said to everybody, I watched a great HR video. I do a lot of HR training and stuff. And everybody sort of says, young kids come in and they don't have any responsibility. They don't have any authority. They don't want to show up for work. They don't want to do anything, whatever else. And this person was really good, sort of saying, well, you know what? Baby boomers, the people who are generally in charge in most of these companies and factories, you created this problem. You brought your kid up as the center of the world. Everybody got a trophy for everything. Everybody always wins. They always get to choose what they want to do in their center of the world, and then they get older and don't realize, hey, the world doesn't revolve around me. Whoa, wait a second. What do you mean it doesn't revolve around me? Of course it does. It has for the first 18, 20 years of my life. Shouldn't it now? So it was actually a really good sort of video to get people's point across. You're like, hey, actually, you know, it kind of happens, doesn't it? So the big one I'm going to use actually is social media, though, because it's fun. Hopefully all of you guys know Kim Kardashian. If you don't, she's just an actress. Well, she's not even an actress. She's not really anybody. She's just someone who's famous for no good reason. And if you don't know what a selfie is either, it's when you take your phone and you take a picture of yourself. And then you can share it with everybody else. So if you don't realize that this is like a natural phenomenon all across the world, everybody's taking pictures of themselves 24 hours a day and posting it so other people can see pictures of themselves. So you sort of look at it and you're like, why do people do that? What are they doing? And it's a whole sort of crazy fad that's going on. But when you get down to it, people that study it and look at it, these people are looking for approval. Because when you go on any of these social medias, you can post a picture of yourself flexing, and it's guys as much as girls. They'll take pictures of their tattoos and whatever else, and they take a picture of themselves with their tats showing, and they share it, and they want somebody to approve that. They want someone to say, hey, I like that picture. That's what it's called on Facebook. I like that. And honestly, they've done a lot of research on it to show that this is a psychological thing. It's like gambling. It's almost like pornography. There's something in your brain that you're going and you're saying, I need that like. I need that like. So I have to share another picture of myself. And I have to. And I keep going. And it's like a cycle of people doing this. Now, is anything innately wrong with social media? No. It's like a gun. Everybody gets into it. I mean, it's a tool. I'll say the same thing about internet. I know a lot of you in here sort of saying, man, internet's got all the bad stuff. No, internet's nothing. Internet is just a tool. People are doing it. So it's not necessarily that Facebook is bad. There are church sites, everybody, that has Facebook and whatever else. It's just a way to share information. But if you want to share information that's all about me, it's all about me, take a picture, then that's not necessarily that problem. So my question is, if you look at Kim Kardashian, she made a whole book of selfies, pictures she took of herself on her phone, put them in a book, and that book was a bestseller. It's not going to ask me how that could happen, but it did. So my question goes back to, should we have empathy for her? I've never actually watched any reality shows, but you can just sort of guess what's on reality shows. What does she have in her life that is meaningful? So yes, she's got a ton of money, I get it. But I can guarantee you, money doesn't make anybody happy. You see all these stars or whatever, they're committing suicide and alcoholics and all these different things. So money isn't going to make them happy. What does she have that is of meaning in her life? In any way, shape, or form. And what are her views going to be on all these issues that we're going to talk about and touch on? You're going to know what her views are because it's all about me. She doesn't think outside of anything else. She's never done these things where you're like, hey, I'm going to do good for somebody else just because. That's the right thing to do. And what they get from it. So, hello. Oh, no, I'll lose it now. Hey, my clicker is my favorite thing ever. If you didn't know. So, another scripture, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. What this tells you is it's not even going to be easy to be a Christian. This isn't like, you know, I'm saying, hey, if you just follow all these Christian rules, yeah, it's going to be easy and life is going to be happy. What it's going to say is, to a certain extent, it's hard work, but you'll have faith and you'll have comfort and meaning, despite the fact that it can still be hard and difficult. And if anything, it's going to be more hard. It's going to be more difficult to follow along with these things. So, if you want to, take up your cross and follow me. So, last one, because I'm going to finish this point. If you post all kinds of really cool pics about yourself and make you look like you're awesome, does that actually make it true? But that's what everybody does. If you're not on social media, of course you don't take, you know, bad pictures. You're not at home when we're beating Harry because he's being a pain. And then we take pictures of it and share it on Facebook. I get up and the Shepherd Smack Terry this morning. You're not going to post that, right? So what you're going to post is, hey, I'm awesome. I went on an amusement park ride, or I did this, or I did a selfie on a mountaintop, or all these things. But you're not even sharing the real you. It's all about setting up this picture of something else that's not you that you can share. And we're going to go into the second one, which is basically, so you know it's all about me. That's that first one, right? The second one is, there is no absolute truth. So that's why I sort of finished with that. Does that make it true? You know what I mean? When you're taking all these pictures, is that real life? Because you took these pictures and shared them somewhere. I'll give you a hint. No. So, what we have come to now is truth is a relative and personal thing. If you think something is true, then it has become true for you. And that's the way everybody views things nowadays in this society. So you can all sort of look over on the right. No one person's opinion has more value than another. That's something that's sort of ingrained in people now. The last 50, 100,000 years, whatever it is everybody's got an opinion. And for them, that's true and that's right and that's fair. And you sort of think, well, you know, is that such a big deal? Is it right? Is it wrong? There's a couple of verses here that you can read on your own, but basically, if you don't know or think about it, there are things in at least a biblical viewpoint that are always going to be true. There are things in the Bible that we would call absolute truth. And there are most people coming up, honestly, even polls of people that go to church, that don't believe there's absolute truth. They don't believe there's an external framework that measures right and wrong. They believe right and wrong is made up by what people feel today, or tomorrow, or the next day. So, just to give you an idea of what that is, something like any binary, which means either or, so you are either male or female, or something where there's a right or wrong, are generally looked at as, hey, that's not fair. If you can get that belief, and it sort of sounds strange, but I'm going to go through what people came up with. Facebook is the largest social media, and they came out recently with 50 options for gender. So they have things, agender, which means you're not a gender, gender fluid, you go back and forth depending on the day, what you had to urge. Cis male, that one I had to look up, I don't understand that. And basically now, because all of these things have lost meaning, you can't just say you're male or female, that doesn't make any sense anymore. So if you're cis male, that means you're sort of a traditional male that actually is male. So they have a special name for males now because you're still male. and of course, my favorite, this came up in Sunday school class, Two-Spirit was my favorite one. So I didn't quite get it, but it was funny anyway. There's two spirits of some, you got, I think it's you got two people living in you. And depending on the day, sometimes you're one or the other, or however that works. But you're going to look at that as kind of funny. But what you don't understand is if you're under 20, that's reality. And you're going to say, hey, that's sort of a funny thing, gender, blah, blah. You're like, no, these people are growing up with gender is a fluid, whatever you want to choose. It isn't a binary category anymore. So there's a guy called Dale Kuhn. He actually started the Institute for Politics in New Hampshire and a couple other things. It's very funny. If you read his bio, it says, my parents told me never to get involved in never to talk about politics, sex, and gender. And he's like, so what did I do? I became a professor of politics that focuses on gender and sexuality issues. and he's really, really good. He's got a ton of videos online. He's on a lot of those things like TED Talks and whatever else. And he's actually out of college somewhere, New Hampshire or Vermont somewhere. But basically what he talks about is you don't understand what's sweeping. He gets students all the time and he's talking to them. And this is their mindset. It's not a right or wrong. Gender is not something that is born to you. It's your choice. That's what you choose. So these people say you're encouraged to say, look at yourself. How do you find in yourself what your gender is? And he's sort of like, he gets into these conversations with young people and he's sort of saying, they ask, what does it mean to be a male? How can I know what it feels to be a male? Or how can I know what it feels to be a female? You know what I mean? Just because I dress like a lumberjack, I'm male? What is it? What does it mean to feel? And basically what he's trying to get across to these students is nothing. You know, there is no way to tell that you feel like a male. If you're looking inside yourself, there's no reference point. You just have you. You know what I mean? You can't say it's male, female, anything else. The only way that has any value is if there's an external reference point. If there's some truth outside of you that tells you what a male is or a female is. In this case, it's biology. You're born into it. It's one of those things. You're just born a male or a female. But these people, and I know it sort of sounds a little bit crazy, it sounds like I'm picking a funny example, but young kids honestly believe it's a choice. It's something that is in your brain. What's true for me is not true for you. It doesn't matter if I had a biological switch that said one thing or the other. It's beside the point. What they're missing out on is that there is a purpose. There's a bigger picture. You can understand how that's a spiral. If you're always looking in yourself saying, well, who am I? What am I? What am I going to be? How does that work? Always looking inside you, you're never going to get an answer because there isn't any answer inside you. If you don't have any reference point, then there's no way you're going to come up with an answer. The only way it has any meaning is if you were made for a purpose. If you had a creator, you were put here for some reason. And without that reason, then you're not going to be able to come up with an answer. So it's easy to think, hey, this is fluid. This is whatever I want to be today is what I am. And that's the way it works. So you're going to love this part. The amazing thing is they put up 50 different options on Facebook. And people started complaining, not because they put up 50 options, but because 50 wasn't enough. So surprisingly enough, by putting 50, everything just sort of became meaningless. Because, you know, you're one of 50, you're one of whatever, and everybody wanted their own unique thing. So they replaced the 50 with a customizable field. You can just put whatever you want now. So you don't have to be, it has options, you can put male and female if you want. But so where do all of these things lead us? Anybody ever heard of trans-ableism? Not in my Sunday school class. Yes? No? It's when, for instance, you don't believe that your leg belongs to you. So you are able, but you want to change that into something else. So you say, this arm just is not me, and I need it off. So obviously it's not a lot of people, but of course they have self-help clubs and websites. As they do if you're trans-abled and want to chop off your leg. So recently, a couple of years ago, the first doctor performed a surgery on this. I think it was in Scandinavia somewhere, and I think it was a leg. He ended up chopping off somebody's leg because they said it wasn't their leg. So what do you think about that? What do you think of the doctor? What do you think of the patient? Most people, when you're looking at the patient, you're sort of like, man, but obviously, they're crazy. You know, you should be sending them to psychology, right? Sending them to get some sort of help because they think their leg is not theirs and they want to chop it off, right? But what our culture has come to is Bruce Jenner's a hero. This is somebody that's an absolute hero, and he wanted to cut off something that was part of his ableness and then have drug therapy to change him into something he's not. And everybody looks at that as, you know, it's got to be right because that's his reality. That's his truth. And you've got to come at that from a couple different ways to say, wait a second, does it make sense? Is there an absolute truth? Is there something outside of us that's right and wrong? Or is it just up to you to pick that? So one of the interesting conversations we got in Sunday school is, what about the doctor that chopped off his leg? Is that right or wrong? And one of the first responses we got is, well, sort of has to do with the patient wants, doesn't it? And that's sort of part of that mentality. And it's starting to get really difficult. A lot of these issues, you think they're sort of funny, but this was 7, 8 years ago when I was at VAE. I had someone start for me that, JB, who was a female, in theory, and had facial hair, had no breasts, had no anything, and came in. And within, of course, a week, everyone was saying, hey, wait a second, which bathroom should this person be using? You're sort of thinking it's funny, but the women basically came to me and said, hey, I don't want this person in my bathroom. She's not really a woman. So luckily, we sorted it, and they were actually kind of funny about the whole thing. They're like, come on, look at me. I got facial hair. Of course I get that all the time. And she sort of laughed at it. But these are the types of issues that came up. There was probably most of you heard UNH came out with this guide. And it wasn't necessarily UNH. It was a student group at UNH. And basically, they said the word American was problematic. This went nationwide, and everybody said, you know, you're not supposed to call people American and whatever. There's some interesting things in that whole guide. Mothering and fathering are problematic as well. But one of the points was the lack of, I forget the word now. Oh, that's it. The lack of gender-neutral bathrooms was very cis-centric. And now you know what cis means. It means that you're actually really male or female, right? So they want other bathrooms on site to try and account for this. forms are now coming out with not just male, female, they're coming out with other options in case you're a third or fourth or 500th option beyond male and female. So this is shaping reality. This is the way it works. There are doctors now in Canada, they've legalized euthanasia for certain situations. And originally their code of ethics basically says exactly that. If you're a doctor, you're supposed to do what the patient tells you. So by their code of ethics, they were basically requiring doctors to kill people. And they had to amend their laws to say, no, no, you can't force anyone to do anything. And we'll get into some of that. It was one of the third or fourth points. But it's creating all of these complicated overlapping layers that make it very difficult, because if you can make up reality in your own brain, and it's got to be true for you, you've got all kinds of fruity realities wandering around, and they're all true, somehow. Because there isn't an external truth that says these are things that are always right or wrong. It's always what you choose. So everybody's got their own reality, which seems a little frightening at times. So those are the first two. It's all about me, and that there's no absolute truth. What's right or wrong for somebody else is right or wrong for them, and you sort of get used to that. So, zero-sum game, you guys have probably heard the term at least a little bit. It talks about politics a lot, to say basically in zero-sum politics, if you can make the other person look bad, then you look good. So it's no longer about talking and sort of expressing your issues. It's about making other people look bad, because if they look bad, then you look good. So that's what it means, zero sum, is if you win something, then someone else has to lose something. There's no way to two people to win, which makes everything this polar game. And on a large scale, what that means is basically, if you are a majority, then you've got that way by oppressing other people. And you're just going to think at first that I'm making all this stuff up. And I'll go through some examples to let you see how that mindset works. But it's becoming ingrained in people's mindset that if you are a majority, that you got that way in some way by oppressing other people, by putting them down, and that's how you ended up in that majority position. So what are some examples? Don Lemon, does anybody know him? He's an announcer, broadcaster on CNN. A black guy on CNN. And basically, after some of the shootings and other things that happened recently and all of the violence, he had 5 points that he wanted to get across to African Americans and say, hey, this is what we got to do if we want to change things. And his first point was, you know, just because you can have a baby doesn't mean you should. Because 75% of African American children are born without a father at home. 75%. So in comparison, Caucasian is 29%. So this is a huge difference. And that's what he said. He's like, you know, you can't look at this. It's 73% in the last poll. 73% of them are born without a father. And the one single largest indicator of a future life of crime or being in prison is growing up without a father. Research has shown it over and over. It's almost 4 to 5 times more likely to end up in prison if you grew up without a father than if you do grow up with a father. So it's an incredible link, and that's what this guy said. He's like, look, 75%, that means 3 out of 4 kids in African American are born without a father, and you're 4 to 5 times more likely to go to prison. Is there any reason that we're not, you know, that's why we're getting looked at as thugs, because we're completing this cycle. We're doing it over and over again. And he's like, we have to get out of that. And he was absolutely crucified for saying that, because he doesn't understand the history, sociology, and psychology of his own people. But the interesting thing is, in the 40s, their rate was actually lower than white people. Both of them were in single digits, but the African-American was like 6% were born out of wedlock and without a father, and whites it was 7 or 8%. And now, X amount of years later, it's almost 75%. So I'm not saying I have an answer as to why, and it's beside the point, but the fact that he got destroyed just because he brought it up. He said, you can't mention that. You can't say those types of things. There was a politician recently that most of you probably heard the claim Black Lives Matter, and everyone's saying that's important, whatever. A politician got up on stage and he said, you know, not only Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. He was booed off stage because he said all lives matter. So this is the mindset people have. If you're a minority, then you have been oppressed, and it's automatic into your brain that that's the way it is. The way we as a country look at property is to assume that poor people are there because they were oppressed. It's not something they have any control over. And it's not to say that, you know, poor people don't have bad circumstances, end up there, they do. But our whole mindset as a culture is not to say, hey, wait a second, this is something people can work their way out of. Let's give them opportunity. Let's get, you know, take down some of the roadblocks, give them opportunity. What we automatically go to is we got to give them handouts. We have to have programs to support them. We have to have this and that, not just welfare, but any program, you know, in healthcare and all these different things to support them. And that's because we automatically assume if they were poor, something else happened. You know, you can't be poor because you're just lazy. And I'm not saying that everybody is. This isn't me getting up on a soapbox and saying, that's why people are poor. It's not. But it's understand that mindset automatically is your brain, if you're a minority, that you were put there because someone else has oppressed you in some way to be that minority. And the interesting thing is sometimes it's actually, they aren't really minorities or these things aren't even happening. So, like, for instance, male and female, women have a better rate of high school graduation, a higher percentage of them go to college, and a significantly higher percentage graduate college. But there are still programs in place at colleges to help women succeed because they need help, I guess. They're looked at as a minority for some reason, so they must have been oppressed. In reality, they're significantly outperforming males. And even most of the research behind the glass ceiling and pay equalness sort of says, no, for the most part, that's pretty much gone now. Women doing the same job for the same length of time are paid the same thing. But we as a culture can't get over that. We just assume that if someone is a minority, that has to be there for a reason. Sometimes that's true, 100%. Are there minorities that have been oppressed? Yes. You know, are some of these things that are happening to African Americans in cities bad? Yes. You know, it's not to say you can get out of jail free because, you know, that's the way it is. But just to understand in your mindset that automatically, if you're a minority, you automatically sort of have some sort of value or benefit. Which was interesting because this was one that confused my brain forever until I finally put this together. Christians are considered a majority. So in people's mindsets, including even my own at times, right, when I do things, you run under the assumption that we have lesser value or we shouldn't have that benefit because we're a majority. So if you're a minority and you don't believe as a Christian should, then you're the minority and you automatically gain standing and power. And it's not necessarily just, I'm not the type to sort of say everyone's against Christians, whatever, because I think we always lean on that and we depend on it way too much. That's not my thing. I think most of the time we just worry about it ourselves. And it has nothing to do with those anchors. Every time I talk to people about Christianity or religion or anything, 95% of the people you talk to are like, yeah, they're a good few. That's what you want to do, rock on, it doesn't bother me. There's not this widespread oppression, but there is a mindset in the back of the head. If, for instance, we had, you know, whatever it is, a Jewish or a Muslim person that came into my college, wanted to wear traditional clothing, Jewish or Muslim, needed time to pray, my colleague honestly would think, hey, that's awesome. Diversity, that brings in a different culture. You know, this is something that our students need to see. They need to see diversity, whatever else. I can guarantee you, if I went down with a big cross hanging from my neck and I said, I need time to pray, people are, and I wouldn't get a bad reaction because I have good relationships with all of them. They wouldn't say, no, that's terrible. But in their brain, they're going to come at it from the mindset of, you're the majority. Why would you need special privileges? You know what I mean? And that mindset pervades everybody. If you're a majority, then you don't need any special privileges. You don't need any extra benefits. Minorities are the ones that are oppressed. And it's such a strange thing to think about in your brain. And how that works that way. Anyone have any questions or anything for me? On my last point, I know I'm going really quick, but I want to get it done. Less than like an hour. So I tend to talk quick anyway. So last one is the grand bargain. I tried to take out the three-letter word just in case anybody was up here. But that's what this is about. Basically, intimate relationship freedom without any consequences enforced by the government. That is something that we rely on. And I think it was that Dale Kuhn that brought this up, and he sort of said, basically, this whole movement, this whole understanding is based on two premises that don't really make sense with each other, but that's okay. One of them is that it doesn't have any meaning. So having an intimate relationship with somebody has no meaning. You can do it with whoever, you can do it whenever. And trying to assign some sort of external meaning to it, it is crimping other people's thoughts. That's you projecting onto them, right? Because their reality is okay for them. They can do whatever they want. So you can't put any meaning on it. But at the same time, the worst thing you can do is repress what your sexual meaning is, right? You can't repress that. You have to let it all out. But at the same time, it doesn't have any meaning. So it's a really sort of confusing conundrum. That's what people are seeing in their brain, and they're being struck with it sort of over and over. So some of my examples, and you may sort of be uptight about this point in general. I get it. It's a big political issue. I'm trying to avoid some of the politics, but at the same time get at some of these underlying things. If you're a teenager, you can't bring Tylenol to school. You can't, even in college, I have to get signed forms to take pictures of people. Because they're 25 years old, there's some of them like 50, we have an 82-year-old student. And I get a form signed to take a picture of them so that I can share it in case it goes in the paper or does anything else. You can't go on field trips, can't be doing anything else. But in high school, 100%, you can be getting contraceptives. To a certain extent, all but encouraged to sort of experiment as long as it's done safely. And in many states, you can still get an abortion without parental permission. So what you're saying on the one hand is, you can't bring in a Tylenol because we don't trust you, but we'll do a surgical procedure that has major sort of social moral implications on your future life without talking to your parents. And that's something that I said, having these underlying feelings or understandings in your brain, we as a culture have said you can't cut back on that. That freedom, that sexual freedom. You know, you cannot put any bounds on that, and that's just the way it is. So, over and over, and what we saw up here this morning, through the Bible, it shows marriage is just a beautiful thing. You know, you become one flesh, there is a meaning to it, and there's all kinds of layers of importance to having that monogamous relationship. And it's an amazing thing when it really happens the way it's supposed to. I don't know if any of you heard the news on Playboy. Yeah? They're going to stop nude pictures, if you didn't know. They're giving up on nude pictures. So the reason that they're doing that is because they're not extreme enough anymore. No one wants to read the newspaper because it's not enough. And there's psychological and neural research. Basically, what's happening over time is there are people that... I didn't put anything on the slides, and I don't even necessarily talk about it, but I was trying to research for this, and I was reading a research report connecting pornography and violence. And this had nothing to do with religion, whatever. It was just a psychologist saying, is there a connection between psychology and violence? And some of the graphic things that were in that report were just absolutely mind-blowing. All the directors of these films saying that they're getting pressure from the people watching them to be more and more extreme. They said that what they saw in the last video isn't enough. How do you make it more extreme? And usually that means leads to violence. How do we get more and more violent and more ugly in this? And basically what's happened is Playboy is just too boring. It's not violent and ugly enough. So now they've decided to go the other way and just take pictures out all the time. Do you understand how sort of frightening that is on a psychological context? One of the things that came up that the guy was talking about, and is so interesting, is Heather loves this. Anytime that science or biology proves God's plan, she loves that type of thing. So when you are in the action of intercourse, you have certain neural and hormonal changes that happen. The design of that is to bond you to the person that you're with. So in a marriage, when you're with the same person over and over, that makes that bond stronger. You start to get it. It starts to happen, and your brain actually has a hormonal, neural component to that that puts you together. But you can imagine, what if you're the person that's doing that when you're watching pornography? What is your brain being bonded to? It's being bonded to some, you know, unnatural, unreal expectation. What if you're going home and have a different partner every night? What is your brain bonding to? It's actually bonding to that, have a different partner, have a different thing all the time. You need something new, something different, rather than bonding you to your mate. And I was just reading an article this morning, actually came up on the Gospel Coalition, that there's all kinds of new laws in place now because on colleges it's all about consent. How do you say two people have consent and that a male and a female both say it's consensual and whatever. And the interesting thing through this article was basically, he unpacked it and sort of said, you're implying automatically, it's an assumption, these people don't know each other. They went home from a party, probably had been drinking whatever else, and how do you define consent between those two people? And there's now laws in place in two or three states on this. It's a common thing to talk about at college campuses. How do you say consent, whatever? And what he's saying is, look, these people don't know each other. Most of the time they're impaired, and you're asking them to make have an emotional conversation that has implications down the line. He goes, that's just never going to happen. There's no way that's going to be neat. You're asking two people that don't know each other to have an in-depth, important conversation. You know, that doesn't make sense. So how do you even make laws? It's never going to be clean. It doesn't work that way. So hopefully you sort of get these types. What I got out with this is that's four views that under sort of pin how we think. Us included, meaning Christians. Those things hit our brain as well. We automatically fall into those same things. This isn't that someone else. So if you're looking at that and you pick out an abortion issue or some other issue that's important, how do you look at these things and say, you know, well, how would somebody possibly, you know, that's, if you're a pro-life person, I think a lot of people sort of look at that and say, how could you possibly be pro-choice? You know what I mean? Isn't that killing a baby? Isn't that this terrible thing? But if you start looking at it, and this is how these people's brains work, it's all about me and my choices, right? Is that going to impact my lifestyle? So this is something that I should be able to choose, right? Because it's my life, and I can choose what I want. There's no absolute truth. There isn't an outside right and wrong. There isn't some grand scale right and wrong. It's all what I think is right, and what I think is wrong is wrong. So there isn't this moral judgment to keep you anywhere in line to say that's not okay. And at the bottom, it's perfectly legal and actually sort of almost enforced that you should be able to have sex anytime you want, whenever you want, without consequences. That's the way our brain is wired. That's the way you tell people, right? So you sort of say, how can that person make that decision? You're sort of like, well, of course they made that decision. You know what I mean? They're thinking in their brain that there shouldn't be any consequences for this. They're thinking there's no right and wrong. They're thinking if this impacts me, this is a bad thing. Of course that's my choice. You know what I mean? This is what I gotta say is you need to have some level of empathy for these people. Of course they're making the decisions they're making. This isn't something you can beat with a stick and say, geez, you know, you're wrong, you're doing whatever else. You know, once you start to unpack where they're making these decisions from, of course they're making that's just the way it is. So, when Jesus was on the cross, basically he was looking down at all these people that put him on a cross. And his last words, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. They don't get it. They don't understand the bad things that are going on. And that's the world we're living in today. So as Christians, we need to understand that these people do not understand what they're doing. They don't get it. This is a mindset that's been built up on all these different layers and all these different interacting things to help them make decisions.
Can you please go back to the scriptures for the grand bargain?
Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome. That's repeated. That's actually not all of them. I don't think that same scripture is repeated like 48 times in the Bible. We made one flesh and we get married.
So. I think there's two things that you're talking about. Why this stuff comes up, and I think what's going on in the world right now is that we have problems communicating with people who don't understand. Christians have problems communicating with people who aren't Christian, and so there's a big block there, and it's getting bigger. Because, like you said, a lot of people have grown up thinking that there's no absolute truth. So, in order to communicate or influence anybody else, then you've got to understand where they're coming from. And I think that's your point. Is that we got to understand their mindset. If we don't understand their mindset, we just spit out words. And it goes back, a couple of weeks ago I gave a little message on if you're talking a different language, they're not going to understand.
Of course.
And being biblical is a different language.
And so, if you come head on, you're not just going to change their mind.
You might as well talk to them in a totally different language. They're not going to get it. So it's really important that we understand their view so that when we do communicate and we can look at it and kind of see through their eyes. And by knowing through their eyes, then we can communicate them to them ourselves in a way that they can understand, that they get it. The other thing I think that this is important for is because Christians can get pulled into this worldview very easily, because our flesh pulls towards that. Reggie, the one that stands up there and preaches sometimes, is not the Reggie that's internal. You know, what I'm doing is I'm portraying what God's message is. And that doesn't necessarily, my mindset agrees with God. And I try to pray and try to get to that point where I'm agreeing with God all the time. But my flesh is not like that. So when these things come out and these opportunities show up, then what happens is I get drawn to it. So if you're not aware of what's going on in the world and what's wrong with the world and not lining up biblically, then we could fall into that pattern just as well. So I think this is a very important message. I really do. I think that it's a very important message that we have to understand and get. I mean, we all giggle. I was cracking up back then with some of the stuff you're saying. It's hilarious. But when people really believe this stuff, it's not funny to them.
Exactly.
You know? So somebody comes up and says, I feel like I'm this type of gender, and you laugh at them, what does that do to them? Right? It doesn't help the situation. So we need to get that. And I think that we don't a lot of times.
That's why you don't shake the baby. That's why you don't shake the baby. That's why they don't
shake the baby. That's it. So with that mindset, I kind of was back then. I felt like God was kind of telling me that we need to. There's one song I want to kind of play, and it's by Toby Mac. It's a little bit of a faster song and stuff, but anyways, it's kind of like that second point. Like, as Christians, do we really want to get pulled into the world? And we really don't. So Noah's kind of pulling that up right now. But does anybody else have something that they want to say on what John was talking about? Yes.
I think as Christians, if you're not coming from a place of empathy and love, mm-hmm. you come from a place of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people look as Christians as being very judgmental yeah. all the time because of that.
Absolutely.
And so people stay away from church.
Right.
They stay away from, you know, religions. And so I think we need to show the Spirit of the Lord living in us, and that will always be a place of love. And that is how you show people who your Lord is. And understand where they're coming from.
And again, you're going to, because you're understanding where they're coming from, you get into their mindset. You know, you can see why they believe the way that they believe. Right?
And just to say that if you look at each of those four, you know, worldviews, that it's like a spectrum for each and every one of them, even for if you want to call, you know, Christians versus non-Christians, mm-hmm. that there's this kind of spectrum, and that we are going to fall somewhere on every single one of those. There can be Christians out there who believe that abortion is okay and believe that, mm-hmm. you know, that there's no absolute truth, that nobody can tell me what to do. There's nobody telling me what to do with my life. And I feel personally myself that as you seek the Lord more, as you put yourself out there in faith, you know, faith is the evidence of things not seen, I think that you have more discernment, which is what we pray for. You know, we have more of a way of seeing, oh, look at that worldview. I can understand it more because you're seeking Him and He's providing you with that truth on every single one of those. You know, you grow. You grow to be more Christ-like.
Yeah, there's nobody more balky than me, as far as like when people tell me what to do, man, I am going to push against that totally. And so, you know, Christ works on that. He keeps working on that. And every time I do that, after I walk away, and I say, oh, why did I do that again? You know, it's like a second thought that never came before. Before it was just push, push, push. Yeah. Yes, bring it back.
So from what I've gathered, and one of the key things is building a relationship. that one-on-one relationship before you can even interact in that capacity to talk about God's love.
Absolutely.
I think that's one thing that sometimes Christians do. They give the fire and brimstone and they say, okay, go read this book.
Yeah. God bless. See you later.
Bye. So getting away from that behavior, and I think that's very crucial, because if you don't know where people are coming from, then you don't understand what their present challenges are. So you have to be open to that and be very prayerful so that God can, and the Holy Spirit interacts with you, so you have the right words, so you're touching their heart and your heart in the same manner.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a very good point. Rachel?
I think we just have to remember how God takes us for who we are and where we're at, and then he works on us. And so we have to, just like she said, we have to meet people where they are, accept them as they are, not try to change them, but show them, and let God do it.
Yeah, and the further we get away from that, right? So you get saved and you keep moving in a Christian walk and you're kind of moving in that direction. Now all of a sudden your mindset is different, you know? So it's very important that we remember where we were, because the further we get away from that, the less we remember. Kind of like childbirth, right? People, it's so painful. And I can remember Carla saying, hey, I'll never have another kid. I am never going through this again, you know? And then the further away you get from it, 3 years down the road, I'm like, let's have another kid. And so, wait, you said we will never, ever do this again. So, and she was serious. So the further you get away, you forget what it was like. So it's true. You know, you're walking a different walk. So you're separated from that. So it's very important that we always remind ourselves, you know, we were no different. I was no different. So, anybody else have it?
Just one more thing. Also that, you know, sometimes that in the world you look at, okay, who's Christian, who's not Christian, and you look at Christian and you say, okay, they have to be doing opposite all those worldviews.
Right, not have
those worldviews. And I think that's just ridiculous, because we are in this world the same as everybody else, no matter if you're an atheist or a transgender or whatever you are. Like, we're all in this world together, therefore we all are influenced by those worldviews. And we're all sinners. And the faster we realize that, the better that will be. But at least if you can stop and you can say this is absolute truth, there's Christ there to lead us in our life, then at least you can begin to try to be more Christ-like than your brothers and sisters who might not be believers. You know? So it's kind of like, don't look at me, you know, look at him.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's always amazing to me that people, I mean, basically when you think about in this life on this earth, we're all trying to move to the same, kind of get to the same place, right? We want to live a life that's good and everybody's kind of, you know, moving in a good path. And we're just trying to get to that end point, right? Without conflict. And yet, we create all the conflict. It's weird. Yeah, it's mind-boggling. Chris, you got something to say?
Yeah, I'm just still trying to wrap my head around what a future government restroom facility is going to look like.
There's going to be a lot of bathrooms. There will be no shortage of bathrooms.
There's going to be a tree.
Joe.
The biggest problem with all of this is people in their late 50s, 60s, and some of us in the 80s and 90s, we were taught right and wrong. God was first. Now we're expected to turn around and say, oh, it's okay to be gay or you know, male, female, whatever it is. And it's hard because we were brought up in a different era. And the biggest problem is the intolerance that the older people have for the younger generation because of what they're doing. But you got to remember when we were kids, our parents were saying the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know?
For different subjects, you know? It's always been like that. You know, you hear generation to generation. There's differences all along the thing.
So it's hard for us to sit there and accept.
Yep.
Because I'm the biggest one. You know, I really have a hard time with all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reading the Bible that's helping me get through a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
But still, there's a long way to go.
I mean, I saw one other person here. Yeah.
Sometimes I think as Christians, we kind of get caught up in our own little groups, and we don't want to associate with someone who doesn't agree with us. And yet I think we have to take the opportunities to, the lady in the back mentioned this, to build relationships with people, but you can't do that if you stay in your own little groups. You have to get out, and I've used this as an example before. I go to Dunkin' Donuts, and some of the stuff that goes on there is like, whoa, but I'm building a relationship with these old-time Catholic men, and we're talking about Christ. But, you know, we get to, well, I heard Francis Chan was talking the other day, and he said, one of the things with churches, especially people who've been in churches for a long period of time, is everything becomes common. They don't tremble at the Word of God. They don't get out and build relationships with other people. That doesn't mean you have to accept but you can't understand them. We've talked about that. You can't deal with any of that stuff if you don't build a relationship. And I wasn't going to say this, but I'm going to, but when I was in the military, I was pure. I'll talk about stuff that John was talking about, sexuality and all that. And when I was in the med, when I was stationed in Africa, we would go to places where there were women who got paid for doing things. And I vowed that I would not get involved sexually with any of those women. And the Lord protected me during those 4 years. I don't know how He did it, but He did it. But I would go into those places and I would be talking to these people and find out why, like Heather said, why are you here? You're a beautiful woman or whatever, and you're doing this, why? So I built a relationship with them without the other stuff. And I think we need to do that in the world. You don't have to join them, but you gotta, and they have to look at you like, okay, this is a regular person who cares about me and wants to talk to me. I mean, understand them. They need to understand where we're coming from. So I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
So we're going to play this video, and it's going to be like, we're going to kind of close down with it, but just basically saying, there's so much temptation in the world to kind of follow that path, right? So we're going to be very disciplined. We want to get into the world, but we don't want to get pulled into the world, right? I mean, that's the trick of the whole thing, right?
Got one more thing. We're talking about education and public education and like the universities and all that. That's where I got in